Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Come by and see us. Brought to you today on the iPhone, Android, Palm, and BlackBerry by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. Mr. Media is also sponsored by ThePartyAuthority.us. Planning a wedding, mitzvah, or corporate event? For any and all occasions, call the Party Authority nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJS. That's 1-800-342-5357, where one call does it all. So where was I before the commercial? Oh, yeah. Mr. Media is recorded live from the new media capital of the world and hometown of the Chichi Rodriguez Foundation, Tampa Bay, Florida. Yourselves in the shoes of journalist Robert Lucetich for a moment. You've been a Los Angeles-based foreign correspondent for Rupert Murdoch's flagship newspaper, The Australian, for more than a decade when the plummeting print business claims you as its latest victim. You're out of a job but want to stick with the PGA Tour. You have a brilliant idea. Write a book about a year in the sporting life of the world's greatest golfer, Tiger Woods. A publisher snaps it up and you seemingly have it made. Except you picked the wrong year to focus on the wunderkind, who self-destructs as your year on his tail comes to an end. Even worse, you miss catching him at his real sport, Mistress Ball. But you and your publisher move forward, and the result, Unplayable, still captures a fascinating year on the links with Tiger. It's a well-written book, perfect for golf enthusiasts, as it captures a young man whose game seems in decline for reasons no one can yet identify. Robert Lucetich, welcome to Mr. Media.
Well, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. How you been?
How are things in Tampa Bay?
Things in Tampa Bay are good. Thank you.
There you go.
You know, I, Robert, I imagine that one day you're humming along on this book, and the next thing you're thinking, oh, crap.
Listen, there was a little bit of that for sure, but I think... Even when I started out, you know, with the book and wanting to do the book, my intention really all along was to say, who is Tiger Woods? Who's the guy, you know, beneath that black Nike hat? And, you know, I think that we just added some dimensions after Thanksgiving in terms of answering that question. And, you know, this is a guy I've been watching for... You know, I mean, I first met him, I think, in 96 when he was still an amateur playing his last Masters as an amateur. And, you know, and over the years have you know, asked him many questions at press conferences. And you know, I have to say, I mean, I always liked the guy. I always thought he was a decent guy. And honestly, you know, I mean, you look at his character failings, and I think, you know, they're significant. You know, if I had to cut off and every person, every man that I know, married man that I know, for instance, who's had an affair, you know, I would lose some friends. And it's you know, part of, I think, the society that we live in that, you know, this stuff goes on. And I try to balance that by saying there's more to this guy than just the tabloid headlines. And as there is more to this guy than the manufactured, you know, IMG image of him.
How close do you feel like you got to explaining him and his character after this year you spent, and then with what happened at the end when it all kind of flip flopped?
Well, I mean, I think the book speaks for itself. I mean, it's certainly the best book that I could have written. I should maybe put it in those terms. I mean. You know, it's not. I haven't photoshopped it. You know, it's just it is what it is. I mean, you paint the Mona Lisa, and that's what she looks like. And you know, I think there's, as I was saying, I mean, there's a there's a sort of a myriad of facets to Tiger, and I don't think that he is, you know, necessarily one thing and only one thing. I mean, people tend to like things in little, you know, shorthand, and he's this or he's that. And I think he's a more complicated character than people think he is. And I think, you know, I mean, look, to me, that's the best book I could have written. I think there's certainly no more that I could have said or done.
I read a story that David Nason wrote about you for The Australian about a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about how there were, when you approached the book, that there were basically two storylines. You wanted to write about, I think golf was in an extended slump, and then you wanted to also write about Tiger. How much did the book evolve even before the whole Tiger scandal became known, and then, you know, by the time it got to the end?
Well, the book was always going to focus on Tiger, and that was, you know, that was always my intention, because, as I said, I mean, I just find him to be a fascinating and not very well understood character, and part of that's his own doing, and certainly the doing of his management company, which is, you know, along with you know, the Nikes and Accentures and American Expresses of the world and Buicks, and, you know, conspired to create this sort of, you know, sort of false image of him, and, you know, this idyllic image that really didn't match up to the facts. And I knew that prior to starting to write the book. I certainly didn't know about the extent of, I knew nothing about the adultery. And by the way, nobody else really did, apart from obviously a very select few people. But I did also know that, just having spoken to him, you know, over the years, you know, he had a very bawdy sense of humor, and a very salty tongue, you know, but I mean, you know, he was, by and large, I thought, more appealing in his native state than he was as the sort of chiseled, sort of advertising creation, the marketing creation. So I thought that, you know, at least in telling that story, that would be sort of interesting. And you know, it's, I think, also indicative of the fact that his peers, by and large, you know, he is more liked, for instance, than Phil Mickelson. And people would find that odd, because Mickelson seems, you know, very people friendly and fan friendly, but Tiger amongst his peers has a much better reputation than Mickelson does. So it's you know, I just thought there's a lot of fascinating subplots to all of this. And then, you know, the story of the PGA Tour was in the article that David Nason wrote. I mean, that was tied into one of my initial ideas, which was to say, I mean, let's go back at the end of 2008, early 2009, you know, it looks like the world's plunging into another Great Depression. And you know, the return of Tiger Woods from serious knee reconstruction surgery for a golfer, the left knee's a critical joint. I thought it would be, you know, as I write in the book, I thought this would be maybe, you know, he'd be like a sea biscuit coming back and winning majors and inspiring a nation down on its luck. And so we didn't end up having the depression, but, you know, neither was he sea biscuit.
The book has, it's interesting, I read in the book, you talked about how Woods is more popular on the tour and probably with the press than Phil Mickelson. It's hard to imagine.
He's not popular in the press, by the way. He's not very popular in the press at all. I mean, I should say there's a select, you know, there's maybe a handful of guys that like Tiger in the golf media, and I would say by and large most don't.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you clarified that. It's hard to imagine that this is a guy that players, and then I wonder about Mickelson even more, but that the players even want to hang around. I mean, you paint him at times as petty, petulant, aloof. There's the whole incident with Kim. It doesn't sound like somebody I'd want to hang out with, even if he was available.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I think ultimately, you know, at his core, what he is a golfer. You know, he knows, for instance, he knows everyone that's on the tour. He knows something about them. He knows, I mean, he's really sort of a golfer in that way. And I think that golfers tend to respect that. And he respects achievement. You know, he, as I say, he's the ultimate meritocrat. You win and you achieve, and that's how you get his respect. Not, you know, which is again why, for instance, he and Sergio Garcia don't get along very well, because one of the things, you know, Tiger feels like he hasn't earned the right to strut around. Mm. He's won 7 times on tour. I mean, not won a major. I mean, there's, you know, he softened considerably on a guy like Vijay Singh, who he, you know, personally didn't particularly get along with. But he softened a lot on him when Vijay won 3 majors, and Vijay knocked him off as world number one, and that got his respect. And so I think that golfers, I mean, we're talking about, you know, the elite of the elite to make it to the PGA Tour. So, you know, they all have in common, you know, something. I mean, they all got there. And I think, you know, the fact that that he... you know, he acknowledges their presence, whereas Phil, for instance, sometimes, you know, they feel like he's very aloof, and a lot of players tell me, you know, that they feel like Phil wouldn't give them the time of day, and, you know, whether rightly or wrongly, I mean, that's just the feeling they have.
Was there much pressure on you after Thanksgiving last year to... juice up your story with more scandal, go back and change things?
Well, no, not at all, actually. I have to give a shout out to Nick Simons, who is my editor at Simon & Schuster, or Atria Books, which is a division of Simon & Schuster, and Judith Kerr and all the crew at Atria, because they were, you know, they saw that what I was trying to do was, you know, trying to paint a portrait. And, you know, okay, so there's another layer to this, and we need to tell this story, but you don't want to get lost in, you know, I've spent 20-plus years in the newspaper game and in the media game, and, you know, I know, I mean, attention spans are short for certain things, and while at the time it was very sexy and everybody wanted to know about Tiger Woods and his adultery, I knew... you know, I sensed that within, you know, 6 months, 9 months, a year, that whole story would have been told and retold and rehashed. And after a while, I mean, you know, what else do you need to know? I mean, it was a very tabloidy type story. But I don't know that the appetite for that would have lingered. You know, I think eventually it would have just gone away. And so I was left with really doing what I always wanted to do, which was to say, you know, just to write a book and say, you know, as I say in the introduction, it's sort of, you know, I'm sort of Nick Carraway and he's sort of Gatsby, in that, you know, you see him through how I see him, you know, I mean, I may not have I may see things differently to other people, but I disclose that, and I tell the stories that I tell because they are the stories that you know, impinged upon me, or secondly, they were, you know, the stories that of what I saw. So I, you know, I never felt a lot of pressure. I mean, obviously, you know, you couldn't ignore it. I was never going to ignore all of this, and there needed to be more time to write it, because, you know, those around him and, you know, the people that I've gotten to know, especially over last year, but you know, certainly over a number of years, you know, there was not a lot of information coming out, as you could appreciate. The people were ducking for cover. So I knew that would take a bit of time before the heat went off that, and I could start talking to people and fleshing out, you know, what the real story was.
Did you ever think after Thanksgiving in November, gee, I'm glad I'm working on this book as my own boss and not having to cover Tiger for The Australian right now and Rupert Murdoch, because it really would have demanded a somewhat different approach, I imagine.
Well, I mean, you know, I always feel that life is what you make it. You know, I mean, I don't know that that in my, I mean, first of all, I mean, I should clarify, The Australian is not a tabloid. It's a broadsheet paper, and it's, you know, more in the mold of a New York Times type of a paper, although it's, you know, politically probably not leaning a little bit more in, to the right than it is to the left. But it's a, you know, it's a pretty serious paper, so it's not a tablet. It's not the London Sun or the News of the World or one of the other news corporation or the Post in New York. I mean, it doesn't have that vibe and it doesn't have that tone. So, you know, I have not necessarily, I don't think I would have felt that. And also I have to say, I mean, I work for FoxSports.com, which is a, I'm a columnist with them, and which is also a News Corp entity.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I don't feel that I need to write things that I don't believe. And so, you know, that's always been my guiding principle. So I'd like to think I would have been able to do it the way I would have done it anyway.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it seemed like a fair question. I am actually familiar with The Australian, the newspaper. But, you know, if I'm an editor there or at one of the other Murdoch publications, and I realize we're paying a guy who's been following, who's very, you know, I think I saw you described as, you know, one of the best writers on the PGA Tour, who has that access and that inside knowledge, I would turn to you if I was the editor and say, hey, you know, the world has changed suddenly overnight on Tiger Woods. Use your sources, use your experience, and go out and get us the story of what's going on there. I'm just thinking that
That happened. I mean, I actually did that for FoxSports.com, and wrote several columns. And you know, absolutely, you know, wrapping Tiger across the knuckles, because I mean, it was incredibly reckless, the behavior. Which is what shocked me the most. If you know, you get down to, you know, am I surprised that a you know, 34-year-old billionaire is you know, would be having affairs? I'm probably not, only because I've been in and around the sports world for, you know, 20 years, and it's not surprising that, you know, athletes don't resist the sins of the flesh, because they're presented with them on a regular basis. But am I surprised? What I was really shocked about, to tell you the truth, is that how reckless he was. Just how, and I know him to be a very circumspect kind of character. He's very cautious about people's motives. You know, that anyone who wants to get close to him, he really sizes up. And to think that a guy that is that careful would just walk into nightclubs and pick up cocktail waitresses is it's mind blowing. I mean, it goes against, you know, everything that he displays on a golf course, the characteristics that he has. And I think that, you know, in the book I talk about how you know, Tiger led this very, very compartmentalized life, and it was almost as if he was different people in each of those boxes that he lived in: the family man, the businessman, the golfer, and the adulterer, and you know, the party guy. I mean, they were all different in his characteristics were different in each of them, and And, you know, I think it also goes to explain why he was so adamant to keep them apart. I mean, he was very, very protective about, he didn't like talking about his family, didn't want to make that a public thing. He didn't want his kids running around being photographed or his wife giving interviews. You know, he was just very determined to keep all of those separate lives that he was leading, including the secret life, you know, very much under wraps. So he was the only commonality to each of them. He was the only common character, basically, to each of them, which I thought was interesting. I mean, obviously there were a handful of his sort of posse, as we might call them, guys that he's known since he was you know, in school, who knew of this and were, you know, aiders and abettors. But there really weren't many, and you know, the women that were, you know, inside that circle of adultery really had nothing to do with the golf and weren't involved with golf at all. He was very determined to keep it all, you know, apart. And I think that's why he was, you know, I mean, as I look back on it now, I think, well, you know, he was obsessive about privacy, and now you can see why.
Well, yeah. Well, and you tell the story near the end of the book about the Buick Open up in Michigan, where suddenly he's decided to play at this kind of downwardly mobile tournament, he stays at the Courtyard Marriott and can't figure it out. Although it becomes clear much later when you see the text messages from his mistress, who was coming and meeting him there, it all makes more sense, right?
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, I don't want to say that the only reason he played the Buick Open was because he wanted a rendezvous with you know, one of these women. I mean, he probably could have done that. You know, he probably could have gone to Vegas that week and done that. I think that he played that. It was the last Buick Open. I mean, we all pretty much knew it, even though it wasn't official at the time. You know, Buick was not in a position to keep putting money, especially taxpayers' money, into golf tournaments. So it was, you know, but he had been you know, spent almost a decade as you know, Buick's main spokesperson, and he had zero reason, financial reason, contractual reason to show up and play that tournament. And I think he did it. I really do believe that. In fact, in the book, I talked with you know, the Buick people who you know, told me that they had no belief that he was coming, because you know, there was no reason for him to come. There was no financial reason, contractual reason, but he did show up. And I really do think that was Tiger sort of tipping his hat to the fact that, you know, they had a long relationship, and he knew pretty much this was the last Buick Open. The tournament was on its you know, deathbed, and I think he showed up really just as a way of thanks. And but having said that, he did use that time to rendezvous with one of these women, and you know, I wasn't interested in the book and going too much into the birdies and bogeys of the mistress card. So, but this one I just tell because I find it amusing. The first round he had played really poorly and shot 71 on a course that was, you know, for him probably about a par 68, because of the drivable par fours and all the par fives are reachable in two, and he putted just really terribly. And that night this girl had flown in, and she was staying about five doors down from me, although I didn't see her. And believe me, I would have noticed in Flint, Michigan. I'm sure we'll get some calls from Flint, Michigan about that right now. I'm guessing, because he had an early tea time the next morning, and he was, I think, had to be up at about 4:15 or something, and you know, I don't think he got much sleep that night. Let me just put it that way. And and then goes out, and he was 7-under through seven holes that next day. So, I tell that story just because it's kind of an amusing, funny story.
But he was happy.
Yeah, I think we could safely say something like that. So, and of course he went on to win the thing. I think it sort of illustrates to me the complicated nature of this guy. He, as I said earlier, he's not. He went from the god of the sports pages to the devil of the tabloids, but I think the truth lies in between.
Well, folks, listen, you can order Unplayable, an inside account of Tiger's most tumultuous season, by my guest, Robert Lucetich, in great bookstores everywhere, or online at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. And Robert, can people find you on Twitter or Facebook, any of those kind of places?
I am a social media cripple. I've kind of deliberately just tried to, I don't want to get the Twitter people all, get their knickers in a twist over there, but, I don't know that everybody needs to or is interested in knowing what I had for breakfast, so I've decided to sort of abstain from that. But you can certainly read my columns on foxsports.com, there's probably 100 of them in there, and certainly that'll give you an idea of the sorts of things that I write about and am interested in, and they're very, focused on Tiger, a lot of them. And the book, as I said earlier, I mean, the book is that's as good a book as I could have written, and I'm quite proud of how it turned out, and I would hope that I haven't seen Tiger since the book has been released, but. I would hope that there's going to be things in there he probably won't be very happy about, but by the same token, I would hope that he would realize that maybe, surrounding yourself with enablers and yes men who would never tell you a truth isn't necessarily, the something a friend would do. And I think he needs a few people that should just point out that, he isn't the king of the world, and the rules do apply to him as they do to all of us.
Well, Robert, I had intended to end by asking you what you did have for breakfast today, but I will let that go. And instead,
I have yet to have breakfast. Should I Twitter that?
I don't know.
The fact that I've yet to have breakfast, but I'll get around to eating at some point. But I don't want to seem like a Luddite or anything, but I just find that sometimes I feel like thoughts can go unexpressed. We don't need to express every one of them. So
I hear you completely. Fascinating conversation, and I just want to thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Best of luck.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And folks, for more original interviews with many of the world's top journalists, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's MrMedia.com. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media radio listeners. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/MrMedia to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/MrMedia for your free audiobook. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, twitter.com/andelman, or on Facebook. Just search Mr. Media Interviews. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.